Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Rock Review. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about rock and roll music from such sources as the News and Observer, The Week magazine, The Independent, New York Times, ClassicRock.about.com, Rolling Stone, BGORecords.com, ClassicBands.com, and Entertainment Weekly. This opening number, Lowdown, is brought to us by Boz Skaggs. We'll be hearing more about and from Boz Skaggs later on in today's programs. But first, these trivia questions.
Turn on that old love light. Turn a maybe to a yes. Same old schoolboy game got you into this mess. Hey, son, better get on back to town. Face the sad old truth.
Our trivia questions come to us today from www.squidoo.com. Question number one. Which lead guitarist had his finger cut off while chopping wood with his brother? Big hint here, in 1987, ice cream manufacturer Ben & Jerry's developed a cherry ice cream with a blend of cherries and fudge flakes and named the blend after this artist. So what is the name of that artist and his band? Question number two, which famous rocker said that he would never see the age of 30 and that he wanted to die with his boots on? Big hint here, the band he fronted was known for the song Freebird. Who is that rocker? Said he would never see the age of 30 and wanted to die with his boots on. Answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. This next article was published in the News and Observer on the 28th of September, 2010, entitled Bon Jovi, Alice Cooper, Up for Rock Hall of Fame. New York, it could be a blaze of glory for Bon Jovi at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The Jersey Boys are up for possible induction in the hallowed hall, followed along with first-timers Donovan, Dr. John, Alice Cooper, and Neil Diamond. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame released its list of nominees Tuesday. There were some familiar names, Darlene Love, LL Cool J, Donna Sumner, and the Beastie Boys have been up for the prestigious honor before. Other previous nominees include the J. Geils Band, Tom Waits, Chuck Willis, Chick, and Joe Tex. To be eligible for the Hall, an act must have released its first batch of music at least 25 years ago. Inductees will be revealed in December, and the ceremony will be in March in New York City. Transition section of today's program brought to us by BGORecords.com. From their series Today in Rock History, and today is the weekend of October 23 and October 24. What were the number one hits this weekend in the past? Well, a half century ago, believe it or not, that long ago, was Brenda Lee's I Want to Be Wanted. And back in 1961, it was Dion with Run Around Sue. And 40 years ago this weekend, it was Santana's Abraxas. And back in 1987, this weekend, it was Michael Jackson with Bad. If you were born on October 23rd, you share a B-Day with Weird Al Yankovic. He was born on October 23rd, 1959. And if you were born on October 24th, you share a birthday with the Big Bopper. That's J.P. Richardson. He was born on that day back in 1930. And also with Bill Wyman from the Rolling Stones. He was born on October 24, 1941. Miscellany in rock history this weekend. Well, back in 1962 is Little Stevie Wonder recording for the very first time. And James Brown recording Live at the Apollo, the first R&B LP to sell a million copies. Back in 1968, Jimi Hendrix' All Along the Watchtower hits the chart this weekend. Back in 1971, it was Isaac Hayes' Shaft hitting the chart this weekend. 30 years ago this weekend, Paul McCartney receives a rhodium plated, that's related to platinum, disc for being the best-selling writer and recording artist in history from the Guinness Book of Records. And back in 1988, for only the second time in UK chart history, each of the top three singles is by a woman. Whitney Houston with One Moment in Time at number 3, Kylie Minogue's Je Ne Sais Pas Pourquoi at number 2, and Agnès' Orinoco Flow at number 1. In local rock news, we see this article by Craig Lindsay. Don't try to define the alpha theory, just listen. This was published in News and Observer on the 30th of July, 2010. Durham. It seems all too fitting that members of the alpha theory would have lunch one Friday afternoon at a restaurant called Cuban Revolution. After all, Jocelyn Ellis, the Tao of War reading lead singer, calls herself a revolutionary, while burly guitarist Jeff Taylor describes what they're doing as a music revolution. "We're trying to put music back in the music business," Taylor says. The four members of the theory, Ellis, Taylor, bassist Nathan Woodlard, and drummer Jesse Siebold, are winding down after performing a set on the WUNC program The State of Things. As they nosh on chips and press Cuban sandwiches, they explain how their funky, guitar riff-heavy union came to be. It all started in 2007 when Siebold contacted Taylor and Woodlard, musicians he had performed with in other bands, about putting a group together. "We were talking about making a project with no boundaries, kind of wide open as far as the kind of music we were going to make," says Hickory native Taylor, 33. While they were composing and practicing at various spots, including a computer repair shop, Siebold met up with Ellis at a managerial economics class at UNC Charlotte. Ellis, who was establishing himself as a professional singer, soon found herself hooking up with this trio. "The initial time I met them, the vibe was, you know, very effortless as far as the music," says the Durham-born Ellis, 23, now living in Charlotte. "We're all on the same page as far as just making music that you can feel, no matter what genre, no matter, you know, what type of style it is. We just want to create. We just want to express." "From the time she walked in and started singing, it was straight-up magic," agrees Taylor, "like goosebumps the whole time." They started performing together in late 2008, originally as Jocelyn Ellis and the Alpha Theory. They've performed around North Carolina and South Carolina and along the East Coast, priding themselves on being a musically eclectic, lyrically erudite collective. "It's this combination of sophisticated cerebral consciousness and down-and-dirty rhythmic chemistry that has led to them opening for a fascinating cross-section of artists, including Everclear, Citizen Cope, even renowned poet Nikki Giovanni. Mostly described as a punk, rock, soul, hip-hop outfit, the band hasn't exactly pinned down its sound. I don't know if we've totally decided yet," says Taylor. Siebold, 29, a St. Louis native who lives in Charlotte, chimes in. "We just kind of get together and jam, and whatever comes out is kind of what comes out. We don't want to be stuck to a certain genre," continues the Gastonia-born, Belmont-based, Woodlard, 29. "So we decided to create a band where we could play whatever we wanted, and we didn't care what anybody thought." And while the theory may be seen as a curiosity by some, with Ellis as the cocoa-colored frontwoman of this mostly alabaster unit, the bandmates assert that their racial makeup does not define who they are as a band, and the fan base that attends the shows, which has been known to include buppies, old hippies, and even whole families, get that. Says Ellis, "When they hear the music, they can hear it in the music, that everything is so integrated as far as all of our energies that no one has said, 'Oh, there's a black girl with three white guys.' So I think people just perceive it as what it is. It's good music. With one EP under its belt, 2009's In the Beginning, The Theory hopes to get full-length release out soon. But until then, fans can listen to their live EP, The Alpha Theory, Raw, available for free download on the band's website. For the time being, Ellis and her Alpha Theory brethren continue their mission of shaking things up, expressing themselves in whatever style of music that comes to them. It's just about being free, Ellis says. I think people put themselves in boxes. And as far as our message, just express how you want to express, you know. Speak on the things that you want to speak on, and bring something that's meaningful, to have substance, to have some type of meaning, says Ellis. Don't make any bread, you know, that has no type of nutrition. This next article was published in the News and Observer on the 18th of July, 2010, entitled Boy, That Karaoke Singer Sure Was a Gem, New York. On a recent Monday night at a Los Angeles karaoke bar, a meek-looking woman in a business suit and glasses was coaxed on stage by her co-workers. While the boozy crowd readied itself for 4 minutes of awkward singing, the woman, Karen, suddenly belted out exquisite, pitch-perfect renditions of the Jewel songs Who Will Save Your Soul and Foolish Games. Astonished crowd members picked their jaws off the floor and cheered wildly. One person was heard comparing Karen to an American Susan Boyle. Unbeknown to them, they had been victims of undercover karaoke. Karen really was Jewel, and the proceedings had been filmed by FunnyOrDie.com, the comedy video website co-founded by Will Ferrell and Adam McKay. The video was posted Tuesday and was rapidly circulating online. I was a bit nervous to do this skit at first because I feared it would amount to little more than showing off some vocals dressed as someone else, Jewel said in an email. I was worried it wouldn't be self-effacing enough. For the video, created by Funny or Die writer-director Eric Apple, Jewel was given a prosthetic nose, wig, glasses, and butt padding. Only after performing as Karen did Jewel return to the stage of the karaoke joint, The Gaslight, as herself. Before the reveal, one audience member says to the camera, "They tell me she only sings at Christmas parties." Though Jewel is principally a singer-songwriter, she has acted before, most notably in the 1999 Ang Lee film Ride with the Devil. This performance was quite a bit quicker. Funny or Die contacted her just a few days before taping, June 28th, and more comical. "This did not require much, as the costume did most of the work for me," said Jewel, whose full name is Jewel Kilcher. "I love improv, and this was a small chance to do that, luckily, as someone else. I would love to do more of it in the future. A dream gig would be a show like Curb Your Enthusiasm." Jewel also shot another video for Funny or Die that she says involves former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin. A spokeswoman for the site said it will be released later this week. So, what do you know about today's featured artist, Boz Scaggs? Well, this article by Joan Goldsworthy, published in www.musicianguide.com, provides this bio. Boz Scaggs was born William Roy Scaggs on June 8, 1944, in Ohio. His father was in sales. Boz married Carmela Storniola in 1972, divorced in 1980, has two sons. He currently resides in San Francisco, California. He also recently, this last summer, performed here in Raleigh with the Dukes of September. Michael McDonald and Donald Fagen played with him. Although Boz Scaggs is perhaps best known for his innovative white soul music during the 1970s, this versatile musician has recorded many other styles of music as well, ranging from rhythm and blues and folk to slick urban pop and disco. Born in Ohio, Scaggs moved with his family to Plano, Texas, a suburb of Dallas, when he was quite young. His interest in music was sparked by his childhood friendship with Steve Miller, with whom he attended St. Mark's Preparatory School in Dallas. Miller, who would grow up to front the highly successful Steve Miller Band, taught Skaggs the rudiments of guitar playing and encouraged him to sing. In the early 1960s, the two friends formed the Marksman Combo and gained performance experience by playing local venues. A few years later, the pair headed north to attend the University of Wisconsin in Madison, drawn to the area in part because of its proximity to Chicago's thriving blues culture. Skaggs left the University of Wisconsin without graduating and returned to Texas alone. He formed a new group, the Whigs, and flew to England with them, confident that they would make their mark on the British music scene. Success never materialized for the Whigs, however, and they disbanded within a few months. Skaggs traveled through Europe on his own, supporting himself by singing on plazas and street corners. The continent appealed to him, and by the mid-1960s, he had established a home base in Stockholm, Sweden, where he became affiliated with Carousel Records, the company that released his first album, Boz, a collection of folk songs, which was a substantial success in Europe, although it remains relatively obscure in the United States. Just as he was settling down for a long stay in Europe, Skaggs received an urgent postcard from Miller, who had migrated from Madison to San Francisco and formed one of the area's first psychedelic rock groups. The Steve Miller Blues Band, as it was then known, was the first such group to be offered a contract with a major record label, and Miller wanted his old partner to share in his success. Skaggs agreed, but stayed with the group just long enough to record two albums, Children of the Future and Sailor, regarded by many as the best albums ever made by Miller Band. The article skips down. In 1976, Skaggs finally achieved the success he'd been so long desired when his album Silk Degree sold over 5 million copies and produced the number one single, Lowdown, which opened today's program, by the way. Rhea described Silk Degrees as a precise, passionate synthesis of rock, soul, and disco that was the epitome of blue-eyed soul. The article skips down. In 1980, he had 4 top 20 singles, and his concerts were sellouts across the nation. Legions of Skaggs fans were stunned when, at the peak of his success, the singer announced plans to take an indefinite hiatus from the music business. Personal difficulties, including a divorce and bitter child custody battle, figured in his decision. Skaggs also admitted to feeling lost in the image that had taken him to superstardom and overwhelmed by the pressures that celebrity had thrust upon him. Fortune and fame aren't what they appear to be, he told Rolling Stone. The demands that are created by a career on that level were more than I wanted to continue at that time. I wanted to step outside it. At the time, Skaggs expected his break to last for a year or so, but in fact it stretched to nearly 8 years, during which time he played only occasionally at jam sessions in bars or in benefit concerts for the inmates of San Quentin Prison. After devoting most of the 1980s to operations at his San Francisco restaurant, the Blue Light Cafe, Skaggs was lured back to the studio by Virgin Records, which felt the time was right for a Skaggs comeback. The singer agreed. I just wanted to get away from the music side of the business, he told Melinda Newman of Billboard. I didn't realize it would be such a long break.
Coming back. In a tombstone bar, in a juke joint,
Some Change was released in April 1994. Penned entirely by Skag, who also handled keyboard and guitar duties. The album was hailed as a dazzling display of the singer's versatility. Though Some Change was less slick than previous Skaggs albums, Paul Evans of Rolling Stone noted the insinuating ballads that slowly build into lush set pieces, vocals that simmer and then soar, and concluded with Some Change brings Bar Skaggs back, lit by the fire at the heart of cool. Though he seldom performed concerts, even at the pinnacle of his success, Skaggs told Billboard that he wasn't opposed to touring to promote Some Change. If there is a demand for me to perform, I want to play, he asserted.
Tokyo rose, I was bound to wander from home, stranger to whatever I'd awaken to. Spun the wheel, took a shot in the dark, one way ticket.
Bar Skaggs will also close out today's program with the song Look What We've Done. But first, these final articles. This next article is from The Week magazine, published on August 20, 2010, entitled Perry's Evangelical Upbringing. Katy Perry grew up in the strictest of families, says Vanessa Grigoriadis in Rolling Stone. The 25-year-old pop singer's parents were itinerant evangelical Christian ministers who taught her that dances, movies, and pop culture were the work of Satan. It was not a kumbaya atmosphere, says Perry. I knew about hell from the moment I understood a sentence. I wasn't ever able to say I was lucky because my mother didn't like that. Lucky sounded like Lucifer. Deviled eggs were called angel eggs. She often traveled with her parents, who sometimes held religious services in hotel rooms with makeshift congregations of as few as five people. My mom and dad practiced tongues and interpretation together, Perry says. My dad speaks in tongues and my mom interprets it. Perry learned to speak in tongues as well. It's as normal to me as pass the salt. These days she's known for provocative songs and her bubblegum meets burlesque image, but still considers herself a Christian. Every time I look up in the sky, I know that I'm nothing and there's something way beyond me. I just don't think it's as simple as heaven and hell. This next article comes to us from Entertainment Weekly, published on the 8th of October, 2010. When in doubt, play congas. Just days after the extortion trial concluded, Stamos hit the road with the Beach Boys, the iconic rock band that's counted him as an honorary member since he played congas on Kokomo in the 1980s. Go ahead and pull up the video on YouTube again. We'll wait. I didn't even go to a therapist after the trial, he says. I went to the therapy of Mike Love and Brian Wilson. I felt all that dirtiness wash away, playing drums to good vibrations. He smiles. I do consider myself really lucky. Someone said the harder you work, the luckier you'll be. I've worked pretty hard, but I'm pretty damn lucky.
Aruba, Jamaica, ooh, I wanna take ya. Bermuda, Bahama, come on, pretty mama. Key Largo, Montego, baby, why don't we go? Jamaica, off the Florida Keys. There's a place called Kokomo.
This next article is a review of Shea, We Are Born, her album. Given a B+ by Leah Greenblatt, published in Entertainment Weekly on the 25th of June, 2010. Shea Furler may still be best known for her silken vocals on down-tempo touchstones like Zero Seven's Destiny and her own Breathe Me, but a girl cannot live on gauzy balladeering alone. Here, the chanteuse explores more caffeinated avenues. Cut a shag rug funk, clap your hands. Finger Snappy Soul, Never Gonna Leave Me, Stop Trying, and even Squiggly Disco, You've Changed. It's party music with a beat. Once again, given a B-plus by Leah Greenblatt, saying download these, Soul Sing Along, Never Gonna Leave Me, and Pogoing Diddy, Bring Night.
You were waiting for me, you saw me, adored me, as I wish the whole world would. You would never hurt me, desert me, or work me, for all the things you thought you could. And you would let the tears from my eyes when I cried.
Shea. This next article is a review of Devo. The album's title, Something for Everybody. This was published also in that same issue of Entertainment Weekly, 25 June 2010. A comeback album from the quintessential new wave novelty act seems a bemusing prospect, but if you stop asking why, you'll likely find yourself surrendering to the band's herky-jerky hooks and machine-like swing. And if the Don't Faze Me Bro bit in Don't Shoot, I'm a Man feels dated, the wry political commentary of Something is impressively spot on. Given a B by Tom Sinclair, who says, download these, mechanically catchy human rocket and zeitgeisty romp Something. The final contemporary rock review is of Miley Cyrus's new one, Can't Be Tamed. Article written by Leah Greenblatt in that same issue of Entertainment Weekly, 25 June 2010. Oh, to be the most famous teenager in the world, a queen even among Biebers, and the lesser, but still fluorescent lights of the kiddie-aimed cosmos. So it is that Miley Cyrus's growing pains, her Don't Call Me Hannah Montana, crise de coeur, are not recorded in a padlocked diary or a social media status update, but writ across an entire album, on a label owned by Disney Incorporated, no less. It's hard not to read an indictment of her time with the house the mouse built in many of Can't Be Tamed's defiant lyrics, from the Girl on the Verge title track to thumping album opener Liberty Walk. Free yourself, slam the door, not a prisoner anymore, and downright mutinous robot. Stand here, sell this, and hit your mark. I would scream, but I'm just this hollow shell. This shell, of course, still has some of the best songwriting and production talent that money can buy. Seasoned pros who bring sometimes too much studio-buffed luster to already solid songs like Forgiveness and Love, a sweet, breezy, soft rock redo, the driving Roxette-esque Two More Lonely People, and Fragile Piano, Please Stay Elsewhere. Permanent December flaunts Cyrus in full-on Keisha mode, all auto-tune and talk-rap sass, while the soaring organ-soaked power ballad My Heart Beats for Love, a song she seems aching to rip into with real force, easily trumps her pale, pasteurized take on Poison's 1988 hair metal nugget, Every Rose Has Its Thorn. Despite her best rebellious efforts, Miley's just not yet that thorny a girl. Given a B-minus by Leah Greenblatt, says download these, Stay, a yearning ballad, and Can't Be Tamed, the strutting title track. So how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Which lead guitarist had his finger cut off while chopping wood with his brother? This was the Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream. It is, of course, Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead. And which famous rocker said he would never see the age of 30 and that he wanted to die with his boots on? That was Ronnie Van Zant. He and two other band members died in a plane crash 33 years ago this week, and he was just 29 years old. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until next time.
Eyes like fire in the